Thank you, Rapid City! Let me begin by thanking Katrina Wilkie, Jay Williams, and Troy Heinert for those very generous introductions. And I want to thank all of you for being out. This is a great turnout on a beautiful day. And I want to thank you mostly for being part of the political revolution. I want to thank all of you for knowing that this country can, in fact, address the very serious crises that we face when we stand together. And when we tell the billionaire class that they cannot have it all, that we're going to create an economy that works for all of us, not just the 1%. This campaign started off about a year ago. No money, no political organization, not much name recognition outside of Vermont. In the last year, a lot has changed. And what has changed is that with our victory in West Virginia on Tuesday, we have now won 19 state primaries and caucuses. And with your help here in South Dakota on June 7th, we're going to be winning a lot more. And I'll tell you what has excited me very much about this campaign, and that is in state after state, and not just in the states that we win, it turns out that we get far more votes than Secretary Clinton from people 45 years of age and younger. And why that is important is that it is showing the world that our vision, a vision of economic justice, of social justice, of racial justice, of environmental justice, is the future of America. And this campaign is doing well because we are listening to ordinary Americans and not just to wealthy campaign contributors. And when you listen to ordinary Americans, this is what you learn. You learn that if you go to the Pine Ridge Reservation, a few hours away from here where we were this morning, what you see are levels of poverty, unemployment, horrendous health care conditions that you cannot believe exist in the United States of America. And when you go to McDowell, West Virginia, you find that many of the people there are addicted to opiates, and that the life expectancy, how long we live, is in decline in many parts of this country. And when you go to Flint, Michigan, you find that children there have been poisoned and their brain and intellectual development has been hurt because of drinking excessive amounts of lead in the water. In other words, when you go around the country, whether it is white rural communities, black inner cities, Native American reservations, you are finding that poverty levels and despair are at a level that is unacceptable in this wealthy country. Now, the United States of America is the wealthiest country in the history of the world, but most people don't know it because almost all of the new income and wealth being generated today is going to the top 1%. Today in America, if you can believe it, the top 1/10 of 1%, not 1%, 1/10 of 1% now owns almost as much wealth as the bottom 90%. Today in America, the 20 wealthiest people own more wealth than the bottom half of America, 150 million people. Today in America, this is America, not some small third world country. In America, one family, the Walton family of Walmart, owns more wealth than the bottom 40% of the American people. One family. Today in America, while we're seeing a proliferation of millionaires and billionaires, people in my state, people in South Dakota, are often working two or three jobs just to cobble together the income and the health care that they need. Today in America, you got mom out working, you got dad working, you got the kids working, and people still, families still are barely able to pay the bills. So the most important thing that we have got to do economically is not very hard, and that is to create an economy that works for all of us, not just the 1%. What does that mean? What do we do? Well, for a start, we recognize that a $7.25 an hour minimum wage is a starvation wage. You can do the arithmetic as well as I can, but you can't make it on 7 1/4, 8, 9 bucks an hour. In America, if somebody works 40 hours a week, that person should not be living in poverty. And that means we've got to raise the minimum wage to a living wage, $15 an hour. And when we talk about fair and equitable wages, we're also talking about ending a system in which women today are making 79 cents on the dollar compared to men. And I know that every man here will stand with the women in the fight for pay equity. This is America, our infrastructure, our roads, our bridges, our water systems, our wastewater plants, our rail system, our airports, our levees and dams should not be collapsing. You know, and I know, that real unemployment is a heck of a lot higher than official unemployment. Because real unemployment includes those people who have given up looking for work and those people by the millions who are working part-time when they want to work full-time. And I want you to think about an America in which we rebuild our crumbling infrastructure. And when we create 13 million decent paying jobs, making our roads and bridges stronger and better. When we talk about rebuilding the middle class of this country, We are talking about ending a disastrous trade policy that has cost our people millions of decent paying jobs. Now, I know it is not a sexy issue, and I know the media doesn't cover it. But trade policy, whether it's NAFTA or CAFTA, permanent normal trade relations with China, are enormously important issues, because over the last 30 years, what corporations have done is say, why do I want to pay a worker in South Dakota or my state of Vermont 20, 25 bucks an hour when I can shut down in America, go to China, go to Mexico, and pay people pennies an hour in those countries? And over the last number of decades, we have lost tens of thousands of good-paying, tens of thousands of factories, and millions of good-paying jobs. Today, instead of being able to get a decent-paying job in a factory, people are working at McDonald's, and you can't survive on McDonald's wages. That is why this campaign is telling corporate America, and that is, if you want us to buy your products, start manufacturing those products here in America. This campaign is listening to young people. Young people are telling me two things. Number one, they are very fearful that for the first time in the modern history of the United States of America, their generation will have a lower standard of living than their parents. Now, my father came to this country without any money, and he never made any money. We grew up without any money. But his dream, and the dream of millions of other families, was that if the parents worked hard, and my parents did, their kids would do better than they. That's called the American dream. And that is what makes our country so extraordinary. Together, we will not allow that beautiful American dream to die. I do not want to see our kids have a lower standard of living than their parents. And here is the second point that young people often talk to me about. They say, Bernie, how does it happen when we do what our parents said was right, what our teachers said was right, what the community said was right, we go out and we get the best education that we can? Why is it that when we get a good education, we end up being $30, $50, $70,000 in debt? $80,000, sorry. And why? $100,000 is like an auction in Vermont. Or just out of curiosity, how many people here do have student debt? All right, well, there it is. Okay. Now, what this campaign is asking the American people is to think outside of the box. Think outside of what the media wants you to consider our options to be. If we all understand that learning is inherent in who we are as a human being, and we want to keep learning until the day we die, if we understand that we are living in a competitive global economy, and if our country is going to succeed now and in the future, clearly, we need the best educated workforce. Why are we punishing people for getting an education? We should be rewarding people, not punishing people. Now, here is the truth. The truth is, that in Vermont and South Dakota, all over this country, 50 years ago, 40 years ago, you had a high school degree, you were doing pretty good. You had a high school degree and everything being equal, you could go out and get yourself a pretty good middle class job. By and large, those days are gone. The economy has changed. Technology has changed. Education has changed. People today need more education. So if 50 years ago a high school degree was all you needed, that's great. But that is not the world today. And that is why when we talk about public education today, we must be talking about making public colleges and universities tuition free. Does anybody here think that the idea of making public colleges and universities tuition free is a radical idea? It's not a radical idea. It is the most commonsensical idea that you can think of. And by the way, it already exists in Germany. It exists in Scandinavia. It exists in countries who have the intelligence to say that our country prospers and does better when we invest in our young people and in their education. And here is what else it does. It tells every kid in America, here in Rapid City, in my hometown of Burlington, Vermont, it says that if you were in the fourth grade and you were in the sixth grade, do not give up on your hope of making it to the middle class and getting a college education. It says to every child in America, it says to the children on the Pine Ridge Reservation, that if you are prepared to study hard and do well in school, regardless of your income, yes, you will be able to get a college education. The other thing that our legislation does, and what I'll do as president, is to address this crisis of student debt. I have talked to people all over this country who have been paying off their debt for decades. They can't buy a car, they can't get married, they can't have kids because they're paying off their student debt. Frankly, that is nuts. So what we are going to do is allow people with student debt to refinance their loans at the lowest interest rates they can find. Now, my opponents and the establishment media, they say to me, well, Bernie, you know, that's a great idea. You want to end tuition at public colleges and universities. You want to substantially lower student debt. That's great. How are you going to pay for it? Well, let me tell you exactly how we're going to pay for it. 8-9 years ago, as you all remember, as a result of the greed and recklessness and illegal behavior on Wall Street, this country was plunged into the worst economic decline since the Great Depression. Wall Street's greed resulted in millions of Americans losing their jobs. Some of those people have still not found work. Millions of people lost their homes and their life savings. Well, I believe that now is the time, given the fact that Wall Street is doing just fine, now is the time to impose a tax on Wall Street speculation. And that tax alone will raise more than enough money to end tuition at public colleges and universities and reduce student debt. This campaign is listening to senior citizens. Now, the media doesn't cover this terribly much, but here in South Dakota and in my state of Vermont, and all over this country, very quietly in homes and apartments where people are living alone in many cases, you have seniors and disabled vets and people with disabilities trying to make it on $10,000 or $11,000 a year Social Security. And you know what? Nobody can make it on $11,000 a year Social Security. You can't do it. A great nation, to my mind, is a nation not judged by how many billionaires it has or how many nuclear weapons it has. A great nation is judged by how we treat the least amongst us, the most fragile amongst us. And we cannot turn our backs on seniors or people with disabilities. Now, I'm sorry to have to tell you that many of my Republican colleagues in the Senate, they think we should cut Social Security. I've got some bad news for them. If we are elected to the White House, we're not going to cut Social Security. We're going to raise Social Security benefits. This campaign is listening to our brothers and sisters in the Latino community. They want, and I want, comprehensive immigration reform and a path toward citizenship for undocumented people. This campaign is listening to our brothers and sisters in the African American community. And they are asking how it could be that we spend trillions of dollars fighting a war in Iraq that we never should have fought. But we don't have enough money, apparently, to rebuild the inner cities of this country. Elected president, we are going to change our national priorities. We're not going to get sucked into wars that we should not be fighting. And we are going to be rebuilding impoverished rural communities, impoverished inner cities, putting our young people back to work. And this campaign is listening to the Native American people. Wherever I go throughout this country, I try to talk to tribal leaders. And I did that this morning at Pine Ridge. And what I invariably hear is that people in great numbers cannot find decent paying jobs in the Native American community. The education system is not working and health care is inadequate. Now, here is a truth that all of you know. We owe the Native American people a debt of gratitude that we can never repay. They have enriched our culture and taught us so much. And one of the profound lessons that they have taught us that we have better learn is that as human beings, we are part of nature. That we have got to coexist with nature. and that if we continue destroying nature, we are ultimately destroying the human species. If elected president, the federal government's relationship with the Native American communities and the tribes will change. We will respect the treaties that were negotiated many years ago. And we will do everything possible to improve the economic life, the health care, and the educational system on reservations throughout this country. This campaign is asking people to think big, not small. To ask ourselves, for example, a very simple question. How does it happen that the United States of America today is the only major country on earth that does not guarantee health care to all people as a right? United Kingdom does it, France does it, Germany does it, Holland does it, Scandinavia does it. I live 50 miles away from Canada. They do it. And yet in America today, despite the gains of the Affordable Care Act, and there have been important gains, 29 million Americans still have no health insurance, and many of you are underinsured with high deductibles and high copayments. And every one of us is being ripped off by the greed of the drug companies. They want to hear crazy. What crazy is about is that one out of five people in this country who goes to the doctor and gets a prescription, that person cannot afford to fill that prescription. That's crazy. What is crazy is that in South Dakota and in Vermont, seniors are cutting their pills in half because they can't afford the medicine they need. That's crazy. And what is also crazy is that last year, the three major drug companies made $45 billion in profit. Now, if every other major country on earth can somehow figure out a way to provide health care to all of their people, you know what? I think we can as well. Now that I have my Little League hat on, I'm ready to go here. All right. And I want you to appreciate what health care for all means. It means that when you get sick, you go to the doctor when you need to and not worry about the deductible or the copayment. It means that if you end up in a hospital, you're not going to come out $100,000 in debt. And here is what it also means, which is hardly ever talked about. We got millions of people in America who are staying on jobs they really don't like for one reason, and that is they have decent health insurance. Think about what happens to America when people can leave those jobs and we can unleash the entrepreneurial spirit of this country. Think about people starting jobs, creating new businesses, and not having to worry about whether they have health insurance or not. Here is the truth. The United States spends today far, far more per capita on health care than do the people of any other country. We spend almost three times more than the British, 50% more than the French, far more than the Canadians. That is why We have got to summon up the courage, and I'm proud to lead that effort to take on the drug companies, take on the insurance companies, and move this country toward Medicare for all. You know, all over this country, we've got Republican governors and senators and congresspeople going all over the country talking about family values. There'll be Republicans talk about how much they love families. Well, I want everybody here to know exactly what that means. It means that if you are a woman here today or in South Dakota or in the United States of America, what Republican family values mean is that you cannot control your own body. I disagree. And what Republican family values, stripped aside, what it really means is that our gay brothers and sisters cannot have the right to marry. I disagree. You know, I always find it interesting. I don't have to explain to anybody here that there is an enormous amount of hypocrisy in American politics. You already know that. But I do find it amusing, and maybe the utmost level of hypocrisy, when you got Republicans going around the country saying they hate the government, they want to cut Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, federal aid to education. They want to get the government off of your backs, except when it comes to a woman having to make a very personal choice. And then they just love the government telling every woman in America what she has to do. That is hypocrisy. Donald Trump will not become President of the United States. And there are a number of reasons for that. First of all, in every national poll and in virtually every statewide poll, I defeat Trump by double-digit numbers. A candidate for president who insults Mexicans and Latinos, who insults Muslims, who insults women, who insults veterans and African Americans. The American people understand that we are a strong and great nation because of our diversity. We are great because we are black and white and Latino and Native American and Asian American. We are great because we are gay and straight, male and female. We are great because people from all over the world have come to this nation and have made us stronger, and that when we stand together as one people, we are extraordinarily powerful and strong. And the American people understand that our coming together, our diversity, always trumps those who want to break us up and divide us. And here's something else that the American people understand, that in this difficult world, it is hard for people just to make it on our own. We have to support each other. If your family is in trouble, my family, my nation have got to be there to help you. If my family is in trouble, your families, this nation have got to be there to support my family. And what the American people understand and what Donald Trump does not understand, that supporting each other always is more important than selfishness. And maybe most importantly as to why Trump will not become president, and that is the American people understand a very profound lesson taught to us by every great religion in this world, whether it's Christianity, Judaism, Islam, Buddhism, whatever. And that is that at the end of the day, love always trumps hatred. Let me be the first candidate for president to tell you a truth which is not often spoken. And that is that no president, not Bernie Sanders, not Barack Obama, not anybody else, no president can address the major crises that we face doing it alone. And the reason for that is that the powers that be today on Wall Street, in corporate America, in the corporate media, among wealthy campaign contributors, they are so powerful that the only way we transform America is when millions of people stand up together. Not just the president, but millions of people saying, you know what? This country belongs to all of us, not just a handful of wealthy campaign contributors. That is essentially what this campaign is about. What this campaign is about is bringing people together and understanding that real change never ever takes place from the top on down, always takes place from the bottom on up. Workers in South Dakota and Vermont and all over this country 100 plus years ago were being exploited, when they were working 7 days a week, when they could be fired arbitrarily, when children were working in factories. What did people do? People came together and they stood up and said, you know what? We are human beings. We're workers. We're not animals. We want rights. We're going to form trade unions. And I thank the trade union movement for helping to create the American middle class. In the midst of the abomination of slavery, there were people at the grassroots level, African Americans and their allies, and they said, at great risk to themselves, that this country will end segregation and racism and bigotry. That didn't start from the top, it started from the grassroots. 100 years ago, and people forget this, women in America did not have the right to vote, could not get the education or the jobs they wanted. What the establishment said to women is, your job is to stay home and have babies. That's your job. But with incredible courage and Tenacity Women said, sorry, you will not define who we are. We will define ourselves. And women stood up, fought back, went on hunger strikes, went to jail, sometimes died to say that in America, women will not be treated as second-class citizens. Nobody gave it to women. They fought for it. 10 years ago, if we were here in this beautiful park and somebody jumped up and said, you know, Bernie, I think gay marriage will be legal in 50 states in this country, the person next to her would say, you are nuts. It can't happen. You're dreaming too big. There's too much bigotry out there, too much hostility. But the gay community and their straight allies stood up, fought back, and in fact, gay marriage now is legal. Here is how change takes place. If we were here 5 years ago, no time at all, somebody jumps up and says, you know, Bernie, this $7.25 an hour federal minimum wage is a starvation wage. We've got to raise it to $15 an hour. The person next to him would have said, 15 bucks an hour? You're nuts. You're thinking too big. You are too radical. Can't happen. Maybe 8 bucks, maybe 9. 15, impossible. But you know what happened? In fast food industries all over this country, in McDonald's, Burger King, Wendy's, what did people do? They went out on strike. They stood up. They fought back. Then in Seattle, Washington, and in Los Angeles, San Francisco, California, New York, legislation was passed, $15 an hour. Brothers and sisters, here is my point. Right now, there are issues out there which the establishment wants you to believe are impossible to address. It's too radical. To say, for example, that we can rebuild our crumbling infrastructure and create 13 million jobs, too radical an idea. To say that women should not be making 79 cents on the dollar compared to men, too radical an idea. To say that in this country we should join every other major country on earth and provide paid family and medical leave. No, it's too radical an idea. I don't want you to think about that. Don't be so radical. To say that the United States of America can do what every other major country on earth does and guarantee health care to all people as a right. Too radical an idea! To say that all of our people, if they have the ability, should be able to get a higher education regardless of their income, is that too radical an idea? To tell the billionaire class, who in some cases pay an effective tax rate lower than you do, that they're going to start paying their fair share of tax, is that a radical idea? To tell billion-dollar corporations who stash their money in the Cayman Islands and in a given year don't pay a nickel in federal taxes, to tell them that they're going to start paying their fair share of taxes, is that a radical idea? To tell the entire world that we in America understand that climate change is real. That climate change is caused by human activity. And that if we do not get our act together, we are not going to be leaving our kids and grandchildren a planet that is healthy and is habitable. Is it a radical idea to tell the fossil fuel industry that their short-term profits are not more important than the future of this planet? It is not a radical idea. The struggle we have now is not that we don't know how to address the crises that we face. Is that the American people, in many respects, through the media, through think tanks, through all kinds of ways, have been beaten down into believing that we cannot have the future that we deserve. And the answer is, yeah, we can. If we were a poor country, I could not tell you with a straight face that we could have health care for all people, that we can raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour, that we can rebuild our infrastructure, that we can lead the world in transforming our energy system. We are not a poor country. We're the richest country on the history of the world. So what this campaign is about is, yes, electing a president, and on June 7th here in South Dakota, you're going to take a major step forward in doing that. But it is also about creating a political revolution. Because at the end of the day, while Wall Street and corporate America have endless supplies of money, if millions of people stand together, not let the Trumps of the world divide us up. If we stand together and are prepared to fight for the America that we know we can become, there is no force on earth that can stop us. Now, my experience in this campaign has been that when voter turnout is high, we win. I would hope that on June 7th, here in South Dakota, you have the highest voter turnout ever for a Democratic primary. And I hope very much that this beautiful state will help lead this country into the political revolution. Thank you all very much.